Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Profit Boss, here is what today's show guest said to me in her pitch for this interview. She said, "For most of us, our jobs are our biggest source of wealth, and they have the most potential to unlock financial freedom or fund the lifestyle that we aspire to have. I'd like to talk to your audience of women about treating their career like a business of one, really stepping into the role of CEO so that they maximize the earnings potential in their jobs, prepare themselves for a more unstable economy, and create a safety net for themselves. I think we sit in the passenger seats of our careers, hoping to get noticed or get promoted or just magically get out of our rut. It's a big mistake, and it impacts not only our wealth, but our happiness. I think it's time for a different approach." So how could I say no to that? Today's guest is Christy Mims. She's the founder and CEO of The Revolutionary Club, which is the number one destination for women who are unwilling to settle for anything less than career happiness. She's a certified professional coach, and she has a background working for Fortune 500 companies. She's been published in Forbes, LearnVest, Yahoo, and she's also spoken at the University of Virginia, the Daily Muse, Women for Hire, the U.S. Army, and other organizations. Her website has been named a Forbes Top 100 for careers, and she herself has been named one of the top 29 coaches to follow in 2016. In this episode, Christy and I talk about the difference between people who discover their career niche and people who never do, the process that she recommends for discovering what you're actually passionate about, the quarterly and annual checkup process that she recommends to make sure your career is on track, the three characteristics of a career she says you need to have in order for it to be your true dream career, and what's the difference between a hobby and a passion, and how do you know the difference? And you really have to know this, because turning a hobby into a career, in my opinion, is very dangerous to your quality of life. Profit Boss, if you're getting value from these episodes and you like the show and you tune in, would you leave me some feedback on iTunes? I would love to read your reviews. I read them all. I love to read constructive criticism. I love to read your compliments. And the more reviews that you leave for the show, the better iTunes helps me promote the show to other women just like you. So there's actually directions on how to leave an iTunes review on my website if you just go to hillaryhendershot.com/podcast, but you can leave it right there in your mobile app, and you can also do it from your laptop. Enjoy today's show. Hi, Christy. Welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Hello. I'm so glad to be here.
Christy, how do you get to be a career coach?
How do you get to be a career coach? That is a great question. Well, the way I can tell you how I did it, if that's helpful, the way that...
Well, yes, that's what I meant. How did you get to be a career coach?
So, I spent a lot of time as a consultant in Washington, D.C. and thought that that's what I was going to do with my life. And what I found out was that I was actually pretty miserable, even though I had a lot of success and made a lot of money and had a lot of prestige in that job. And when I was like, oh man, I cannot keep doing this. Cause I remember I got pulled into my boss's office one day and she was like, "I want you to have my job. I'm leaving. I'm recommending you get my job." And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the last thing in the world that I want. You know, here I am being offered like the director position, youngest director, you know, in probably in the company, you know, huge portfolio of work, great team, great clients. And all I could think was, I don't want this. So I had this like sort of come to Jesus moment with myself where I thought I need to figure out what I do want. And one of the things when I looked back over my career that I always was drawn to was helping other people with theirs. You know, I loved the mentoring aspect of my job. I loved the fact that when I did actually take that job as a director for a while, I loved being able to mentor my team and to lead my team. I loved working on building our skill set, our interviewing skill set, our recruiting skill set. You know, I love designing trainings. And so there's a part of me that said, I think I'm going to explore coaching And when I got into that coaching program, and I recommend anyone who's thinking about becoming a coach, if you really do want to become a coach, take a certification program because it really is a trained skill. I got into that program and I thought, man, you know, I love coaching and I love helping people with their careers. And these two things make so much sense for me to do together. Because when I look around and I look at all the consultants that I know, and I sit on the metro, and I lived in Washington at the time, and I look at the metro and people on the metro, like so many people are miserable when they're going to work. You can see it, right? They're just sitting there and they're like, they look absolutely miserable and exhausted. And I thought, you know, I can help people with this. I can help people figure out work that they love because I think that changes your life. Because we spend more time at work than we do asleep or with your spouse or with your family. You'll spend most of your life at work. So you might as well do something that you enjoy. So that's how I did it. I really looked back at my life. I got certified. I explored what coaching looked like. And then finally I said, this is it. I'm going to do it. And I started my business.
Stepping into being a coach, I think, has to be fairly intimidating because there's the whole broad swath of how coaches turn out to be in terms of success, everything from, you know, no clients to wildly successful. And you have to have that skill of selling to do it successfully.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that I did before I really seriously considered leaving consulting was I talked to a couple of the coaching programs and I asked them, what makes a successful coach? Like as you watch people go through your certification and graduate and go on to start their businesses, why do some of them succeed and why do some of them fail? And the answer that they gave me was the people who fail are the ones who just want to coach and do not realize that they have to run a business as well. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, if you want to start your own coaching practice and be your boss, then recognize that a huge part of what you're going to do is be a business owner, which is a completely different skill set and you got to want it. So that was 100%, it was super helpful to hear. And to your point, really useful going forwards.
I bet. Can you give examples of some of the coaching certification programs you like?
Yeah. You know, so a couple, like on a big picture level, when you're choosing a coaching certification program, I highly recommend you choose one that's accredited by the ICF, which is the International Coaching Federation. So, you know, it's a worthwhile program. I highly recommend you choose one that has an in-person component. There are a lot of like online, I'll teach you how to be a coach in 6 weeks online programs. And I don't feel like you can learn how to be a coach just online. It is a personal hands-on skill set. And then choose one with a flavor. Each coaching program teaches you the same set of skills, but they come at it from their own sort of filter and their own flavor. So choose one that has a flavor that you like. So three that I like, I went to IPEC, Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching. They have programs all over the United States, and I think a couple in Europe. I looked at CTI, Coach Training Institute, which is sort of the grandfather of all of the coaching programs. And they also have programs all over the United States and the world. And I also looked at Georgetown because I lived in Washington. And that is a very reputable program. And I was actually going to choose Georgetown, but I didn't because one, they wanted me to certify my international master's degree and go through this really arduous application process. And I was like, oh my gosh, for a certification program, seriously. And two, their flavor was organizational coaching, meaning a lot of the people that they taught you how to be a coach within your current organization. That's sort of the view that I got from them, and that's their focus. And I wanted to start my business. So I went with a program that they said, you know, one of the things that we're going to teach you is how to set up your coaching practice. So was really important.
So it's interesting. We're starting an episode on how to manage your career successfully by talking about options to be a coach. And I know at the end, we're actually going to kind of bookend this conversation with a little bit more about being a coach, but I'll transition into your core competency and what we really want to talk about today, which is guiding people to be successful in their careers. And I know, Christy, that you're really passionate about having people have work that they love. And I have to tell you, it seems like an elusive beast for a lot of people. Don't you think?
Yes, and the reason for that is because we're not taught how to figure it out. You know, nowhere in your high school or college or graduate school is there a course on like how to figure out what you really want to do, right? You're just expected to sort of figure out what you like and then hopefully it works out.
Right, go do that.
Yeah, but what if you, like me, you know, love history, but it's not something you want to do professionally, and you don't want to be a lawyer, which is what every 90% of history majors do.
That's right.
Like, what do you do? You know, I mean, no one teaches us this. So it's like, I get that a lot of people are just told, get a job, get a paycheck, and, you know, don't worry about it, suffer for the rest of your life and just live on the weekends. Right. And it makes me really sad because I don't think it has to be that way.
And so from a high level, the principles to a healthy financial life all start with spend less than you make. Mm-hmm. If there were principles to loving your job, what would those be?
This is an awesome question. I love this question. A couple things. So loving your job, the couple things you need to think about is, one, does your job align with what makes you happy in terms of what you value in life? So the first thing to that is, for instance, if you, like me, do not like to work in a closed, dark office, you could have the most interesting work in the world. And if you were in a closed, dark office, you'd be miserable. So you need to think about day to day, what do you need in your work environment to be happy? Because that's really important. And the second thing is, are you doing work that comes from a place of passion? So what this means is, do you understand why you're here on the planet and what you have to offer the world? And most of us don't, which is, you know, because it's hard to...
I was going to say, that's a high bar. That's where you start. Seems like it's easier to spend less than you make.
But the way to figure it out, it's a process to figure it out. I don't expect anyone to wake up and know it. But the way to figure it out, and I'll do a two-step process here, is to figure out where your interest and engagement lies. So if you're interested in something, that means you're usually reading about it, or you've thought about it, it's on your mind. If you're engaged in it, it means you're actually taking action. You're not only reading about it, you're experiencing it. Like, I am passionate about chocolate. I am interested in chocolate. I think about it a lot. And I am engaged in chocolate. I am eating chocolate all the time. I take chocolate tours when I can. You know, I'm like reading up on chocolate. I'm a little bit weird about chocolate. I have a passion because I have interest in engagement. The same is true for coaching for me, clearly, right? I'm interested in it. I thought about it for a long time and I was engaged in it. I got a certification. I write, I teach, I coach, I speak. So I'm very much engaged in it. But I also, for a period of time, thought I was going to be a shoe designer because I was interested in shoes, right? But when it came to that engagement piece of like, am I interested in more than just wearing shoes? The answer was no. Like, every time I thought about, well, maybe I'll talk to like a shoe manufacturer, or maybe I'll read up on like shoe design school, I like had zero engagement in it. So clearly wasn't a passion for me. So if you go back to what you're really interested in and what you're engaged in, that starts to help you figure out where your passions begin to lie. And then you can use that to figure out the job that's going to work for you, coupled with what you really value in your work environment.
So maybe look back at your calendar. If you have an electronic calendar, what's filling your days?
And the other thing that I really like to tell people to do is look at your browser history.
Mm.
Because if you're going to websites again and again, or a certain type of website or a trend, chances are you're both interested and engaged in that topic.
I've done this. My browser history, it's super nerdy, but I am in the right role. I'm definitely doing what I'm interested in and engaged in. So, okay, great. That's really great.
Yeah.
And I know that one of the things I invite people to do in my core training programs is give themselves a raise, a promotion to CEO, to chief executive officer of their financial life. And then I invite them to look at how they've been managing their finances from that perspective. Like, if you were the CEO of this company, would you fire you? And it's really, I think, if you really get into it, if you really take the role on, it can be really life altering in terms of how you manage and be assertive and aggressive and moving. I know people react to that word aggressive. Let's just stick with assertive in moving things forward and producing results. And one of the things I loved about something you said to me was you really encourage women to treat their careers like they're the CEO of their careers. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. I mean, first I'd like to say, well, I love the CEO of your finances thing. So that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, fangirl. Second, the CEO of your career, like, the thing that we all have to recognize is that your company is never going to take care of you. If they like you, if they feel you're valuable, they'll do their best. But if push comes to shove, you're always going to lose in terms of money, mm-hmm. right? They're going to, if they have to downsize, they're going to let you go, even if they love you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way that it is. So we need to take control of our careers and be the CEO, meaning you have to look at your career and think, what is this portfolio that I'm creating in my career? Am I investing? You know, what am I doing day to day? How is that helping me? What skills am I learning over this year, next year, this quarter, next month? You know, what am I investing in for 5 years down the future based on how my industry is changing? Because things are changing really fast, and how we structure the work environment today, I think, is going to continue to be more and more freelance, more and more job sharing, less and less stability, more telecommuting. And, you know, you need to kind of have that quarterly view of your career about what you're doing, as well as the long-term view, because you're the only person who really cares when it comes down to it, right? And so you need to step into that role and really think about, am I investing in myself enough? Am I working towards what I want? Do I have my eye on my strategy and my goals? Am I allowing myself some play, some downtime to recharge? Like, am I really looking at this like a portfolio that I'm trying to grow?
That's great. I think there are so many ways that our topic areas intertwine, because I also say to people, no one cares more about your money than you. Your money is no one else's job but yours. So that's really great. And you said something, am I having a quarterly view? Is there a kind of check-in or checklist or something that you think people can touch down on that's objective on a quarterly basis that's valuable?
Well, I really like, much like companies plan, I like to plan in two different ways, quarterly and then yearly, right? So I like to kind of have a few big goals for the year. You know, for some people, it might be, I'm going to get promoted this year, or I'm going to find a new job this year, or I'm going to start to figure out, you know, what my next route is in this company, or pick up this certain skill this year. And then break it down by, so to do that, what do I need to do this quarter, right? Do I need to talk to my boss? Do I need to take that class? Do I need to sign myself up for a certification program? What do I need to do? And check in with yourself. And so that you can kind of make those adjustments quarterly as to how you're doing, and if that goal still makes sense, or if something else has come along based on what you've learned since in the interim, I think it helps to keep you on track. So what I advise that you do is one Saturday or Sunday morning, set a timer for about an hour to 90 minutes and sit down and sort of say, what do I want to accomplish in the next 3 months? You know, how does that fit into my bigger plan for the next year? What are the specific steps I'm going to take to get there? And what do I need to do, you know, this week to get started?
Should you check in with your supervisor about that?
Depends on what your goals are.
Okay. That's true, huh?
Yeah. So if your goal is to get a new job, maybe not so much. But yeah, you should, if your goal is to get promoted or to do something more in your company, you should absolutely be talking to your supervisor. That would probably be, you know, early on in your yearly planning that you would do that. And then you might schedule check-ins with them or talk to them about projects or things, you know, information that you need in order to make your plan. Absolutely. I think talking to your boss about your excitement and your work and how you want to grow with the company is a conversation they always want to have, you know? So it's, use that. Talk to your supervisor, start to make plans with them and invest with them, and be surprised at what your company might be willing to do for you.
Yep. Being an employer myself, I can tell you, I would love it if my team came to me and said, hey, let's talk about how I can make the company more valuable this quarter.
Yeah. And here's what investments I think I can make to really help. And here's the training that I think might help me too. What are your thoughts? Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I would love that. That would make me very happy. Where to start? Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit and let's address the woman who hasn't really clicked into a role or a career that's consistent or fruitful for her. Okay. And one of the things I know from my role in people's financial lives is that if you don't plug into a long-term role or career, that people's earning potential really drops significantly. So what do you think is the difference between people who seem to find their niche and people who don't?
That's a really interesting question. I think
you're a sire.
No, because I it's a really good question, and I want to make sure my answer is clear. The people who don't find their niche, I think, are the people who are not proactive.
Okay.
And I think if I could, you know, break it down to the simplest thing, I think that's it. I think it's a lot of, oh, the company did this to me, or, oh, I heard about this opportunity,
or this fell into my mentality.
Yeah. A little bit more victim mentality, a little bit more, oh, I'm going to give it another year or another 5 years. And they're unwilling to shake up the status quo and even put anything out there. And I think the people that, I think it's, there's always outliers to this, but I think the people that really have those successful careers, they are much more proactive.
What about the example of someone who got trained in something very specific, but now for geographic reasons or market reasons, there just aren't a bunch of jobs that are available. And so they feel like they're specialized and trained, and it's hard to give up that possibility. So my question is really two-pronged. First of all, how long is too long to look for a job and not find one? Like, how long do you give it? And second, how would you, if you were coaching that person, what would you say to her?
Well, the rule of thumb is it's 3 to 9 months to find a new job.
Okay.
Is what you can expect to take. And that
is that whether you have a job now or not?
Either way, but it tends to be faster if you already have a job.
Okay.
Because you don't have to explain any weird absences, right?
Okay.
But that's assuming that you're looking for a job in your industry or that's related. So I would argue it might be even longer if you're looking to change careers entirely or change industries. How long is too long depends on, I mean, how much do you have in the bank? What's your level of risk? You know, what are you hearing on interviews? Like if you're not even getting to the interview phase and you're getting bad feedback, you know, maybe you should start looking for something else. So a lot of it just is going to be situational. To answer that, did that answer the first part of your question?
Which was the first part of my question again? The first part was how long is too long?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That answers that question. I got it. And it's interesting to note that even though, say you have a full-time job, so a lot of your time is taken up by the work that you're doing now. And so you have less time to job search, that interestingly, it actually takes less time to find a job when you have a gig already.
It's like, you know, it's like dating. You know, if you have a boyfriend, sometimes it's easy to find the next one.
That is such a briar's, what's the word I'm looking for? Briar patch. That is such a briar patch.
Yeah.
It's easier to find a new boyfriend when you already have a boyfriend.
Yeah, that kind of, yes. I think part of it is because you tend to be more confident. And the second thing is you tend to have a more active network because you have current coworkers and colleagues.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you also, and this sometimes too, you have more structure in your day because you are going to work. So that means you're much more efficient with your job search. I think people who are unemployed, it's hard to structure the day. It's easy to get unmotivated and procrastinate. And it's easy to start to feel down because you don't have a routine or a keystone holding you in place.
Mm, good point.
So all
of those
reasons.
I can't imagine that. If I didn't have a job and I was sitting at home, I think it would actually be harder to get me off the computer than to get me on. But I hear you. I know what you're talking about. Okay. So then the second part of my question was about what to do next then.
What to do next when you have been unemployed for a while? I'm sorry to go off on a tangent. Now I'm like, wait, crap, that was a really good question. It slipped my mind.
We're talking about a woman who's specialized and trained in a particular role. Mm. And so let's say her role historically has been really niche and she's really clear, okay, this isn't it. I'm no longer going to be able to make as much money as I was. I'm going to have to segue here. What are the first steps? She has the opportunity to start something completely from scratch. She has the opportunity to use existing skills in a different role. Would you recommend informational interviews? I always send people off on informational interviews. I'm no career coach, but I'm like, go talk to people. What do you think?
Yeah, I love that. And that is absolutely part of the process because a lot of times fact trumps fear. And once you have information, you can make really informed decisions. But what I would do first actually is if she hasn't really figured out what her passion is, I would go back and do that because the way I define it, it's not really a job. Passion is who you are in this world and what you have to offer. Your job is how you express it. So for instance, if you have a passion around healing and you become a doctor and a surgeon, and then you break your hand and you can't operate anymore, does that mean you have no passion? No, you know, your life isn't over. You can find another job that allows you to practice your passion for healing. And that could be a variety of things. And so if you go back to passion and use it as a guide stone for you, as a compass, then it's easier to start thinking, okay, what are other things that sort of line up with my passion and my purpose here? And now what are the skills that I have and my values that I really want to employ so I can narrow down what jobs would be the right fit for me?
Okay, great. Do you think about careers in phases, like beginning, middle, and late stage? Do you think about them like that?
No.
Okay. How should careers progress? What's an ideal vision for someone?
Well, it's hard for me to say that because I think careers have gotten to be so different these days. But I think the ideal vision is that you wake up in the morning and you like what you do and you feel like you're paid what you're worth.
Oh.
So that what that is going to be different for everyone. But
so it's necessarily always getting paid more this year than last year.
No, not at all. Because when you do work that you love, the money matters a heck of a lot less, truly. We all have a number, right? We all have a number of like, I need to pay my rent. Or, you know, certain things. But when you're doing work you love, what I found again and again and again with all my clients is that the number is a lot lower because a lot of times we spend money on stuff we don't need as a distraction, right? To kind of hide the pain of the fact that you really hate your job.
Yes, or boredom.
Yeah. Or you're like, well, you know, I take a 5-star vacation every year. So I justify hating 50 weeks of my life. So I can spend $10,000 on 2 weeks. So I have to have this crazy job because I have to take my vacations. Like, yeah, well, if you didn't hate, you know, maybe if you didn't hate your life 50 weeks of the year, you wouldn't even need that vacation.
I know. And now we're getting into like personal therapy realm, right?
Well, no, yeah. But I guess where I got off on the tangent a little bit, but really, truly, I think the career is when you're younger, it's really trying to get as many skills as you can within your industry and experience a lot of different things and then start to plan, well, what will make me happy? Am I someone who wants to be in a leadership role? Am I someone who wants to be a superior expert, right? A thought leader? What do I want to be? Because those are different skill sets. And then as you progress through, you can start to focus on, okay, if I really want to be a thought leader, that doesn't mean I want to be the CEO of my business. That means I want to be known for my expertise in this area. What can I do to really grow that expertise and build my visibility? Mm-hmm. And I think you measure yourself against what your goals are, which is why every year I think it's important to be like, what do I really want to accomplish this year in my career? What's really going to help move me forward? And not against, oh, I got a pay increase of 10% or I didn't. It's more, I really wanted to tackle this specific project and I did. You know, and that's what's important here. I think you've got to figure out what's really important to you, what's going to keep you feeling challenged and impactful in your work. Because I think most of us want to feel like our work has meaning. And if you can do that, then you're winning. And it doesn't matter if you are an executive assistant or the CEO of Coca-Cola, you know, as long as you feel that way about your work.
So let's address a woman who is in a job that challenges her, it engages her passion, where she's engaged and what she's interested in, and financially it's a dead end. What would you say to someone like that?
Well, I would say what's cool about that is that when you are doing work you love, you tend to be more creative because you're not being drained all the time by having to like paste a smile on your face and show up every day for a job that you hate, right? Which takes a lot of energy. So that means that you can use your creativity to figure out another stream of income for yourself. Right. If you decide, you know, I love teaching guitar to 8-year-olds, but I can only make $20,000 a year doing that. And like, I need to make more. Then you can use your creativity. You can start, you know, teaching guitar online. You can get a real estate license and sell real estate in your spare time. You know, you can figure out another way to make money and still allow you to support that passion.
Okay.
I think that's hard to do when you really hate your job. But if you do like your job, I think it's much, much easier because you're already in a good headspace.
Yeah. I think there's this place that some people get, they feel like financially it's okay if they stay. It's never going to be great. It's never going to be what they want. But it's this weird crossroads or juxtaposition of it would take more activation energy for me to do something about it. And the world is a scary place and this is secure. So sometimes I meet people and they're in this place of like general malaise because it's the right job-ish, but definitely not financially, if that makes sense. So I think that's really great. And I like the idea of recommending, I call that a side hustle.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't like make that up. Okay. But
yeah, no, I've heard that term. Yeah. And I agree. That's exactly right.
It's like, okay, so go figure out another stream of income. I like it. Mm-hmm. And then earlier you said how I define passion. Is that more distinct than you already talked about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said it because there's a lot of different career coaches out there and we all talk slightly differently. And so I really tend to define, I use the word passion when sometimes I'm actually meaning the word purpose. So I feel like I think there's something out there that's greater than yourself. You know, you're here on this earth for a reason. And I also think that, you know, your job can, you can feel very passionate about your job, but there's, you'll be happy in more than one job over the course of your life. And in fact, you're probably going to have 11 jobs in your lifetime, if we believe the Department of Bureau and Labor Statistics. So where I'm going with this is that it's how I define it, so that people can step back and kind of have that big picture view of, here's my passion, here's what I'm really meant to do. Now let me figure out how to express it. And that's going to change over time.
Yeah. And you advocate, and some of this we've already talked about, but you advocate that people look for creativity, flexibility, and engagement. Can you talk a little bit about those three features and tell us why you think those are the three that are so important?
Well, two reasons. One is just the way the economy is going. So it's just based in this idea that with information technology and the way companies are, we're breaking apart sort of that company compact if you have a pension or even a 401k, right? And so being creative and being flexible and being agile and engaged, that means that you kind of rise to the top of the talent pool. And as people become more and more freelance and more flexible, I think companies appreciate that even more. They want someone who can roll with the punches. You know, 10 years ago, social media manager wasn't even a job, right? And now it's a crazy popular job. And data analytics wasn't, you know, marketing analytics was different. And so many industries have changed. And, but then for ourselves, I find that when we each have different ways of being creative. For some, it might be working with an Excel spreadsheet. For others, it might be working with your hands. But when you allow flexibility and creativity in your work, I feel like you tend to be more engaged. And when you're engaged, you like what you're doing, right? You're not worried about it. When you're fully in the moment, when you're present with what you're doing, you don't have time to be tired or frustrated or drained. You're just there. You're enjoying it. And that's a really good space to be. So I think from both sides, from what companies are looking for, plus for what's good for you as the CEO of your career, these are really good things to shoot for.
Okay, good. And again, not to be pedantic on this subject, and in the pre-interview chat, you and I talked about the fact that you're in Oakland, I'm in San Jose. So we're suffering some of the highest cost of living in the world. I'm imagining, you didn't actually say it, but I'm imagining you're in Oakland, maybe because finding a place in San Francisco didn't work out.
No, actually, I'm in Oakland because my fiance is in Oakland and his commute is too far.
Oh.
He works further out in the East Bay. So I wanted him to move to San Francisco, but he couldn't because the bridge traffic would have killed him.
Okay, scratch that. But so nowhere in what you talk about is money. And I know, I agree with you that emotionally it doesn't matter, but in our lives it matters.
Right. So I recommend people do two budgets when they think about their career.
Okay.
The budget that I want to maintain my current lifestyle, or like even a little bit nicer, right? You know, which includes all of your, if we're talking about the ladies, of course, your, you know, hair appointments, nails, you know, vacations, everything.
Yeah.
And then do your budget of like, no, but seriously, this is what I need to survive. And what I found, you know, we talked about this earlier. It's just what's interesting is that most of us need less money than we think, right?
Yes.
And once you do that second budget, it opens up a lot of freedom, regardless of if you take a job that doesn't pay you as well. I tend to find if you do work that you love, you're paid better. But if you have that second budget, then it takes away a lot of the fear of like, oh my God, I have to stay at this financial analyst job because I can't afford to, you know, have to meet my mortgage, blah, blah, blah. When you start to really do that second number, then you realize, wait, I don't have to stay. What else could I do? And then that opens up a world of opportunity. So I totally advocate doing both those budgets so that you're super clear. I think most of us just do the first one of like, here's what it costs me to live now. So this is what it will cost me to live forevermore, right? But there's always fat in there for almost all of us. And if you can free up some of that, it does open up a lot of potential.
And in both those budgets is your savings amount. So either way, whether you're at cost or you're at cost plus some fat, you're thinking about putting away for the future.
And by the way, the other thing I totally advocate in one of my Career Happiness Revolution program is I make people ask for a raise, even if you hate your job, because like most of us aren't being paid what we're worth, especially if you've been at a job for any period of time, you fall behind the market rate. So, you know, I'm all for also maximizing your earnings while you figure out what it is that you want to do. And while you're figuring out your next steps, why not? All they're going to do is say no. And if you make a great case for it, they'll probably say yes to at least part of it.
That's so awesome. And I
I'm
have
for
a,
that.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, you should always be asking for things that you want. And I do have an expert interview on that. If you want to check out Shanna Landold in episode 17, just go to hillaryhendershot.com/17. That is how to ask for a raise and actually get it. And I'm sure you have some expertise to add to that as well. That's great. And I love, you know, again, something I ask the folks I coach to do is ask for things, ask for more money, ask for free stuff. Shanna said, ask to get in front of the person in front of you in line at the grocery store. Just make that a habit in your life and make it okay to get a no.
But I do think there are, like, there's living a rich life is two things. And for most of us, we associate it with money. And I believe that when you do work that you love, you do unlock more of your earning potential, right, over time, which is just on a purely financial way is awesome. But I also think that living a rich life is, you know, just about enjoying the day to day, right? And the small things as well as the big things.
Yeah.
And some of that's completely unrelated to money, and that we forget that second piece of it. We forget that so much pleasure can be had from certain things, from opening up your computer with a smile, you know, from having someone telling you you did great work and you know that it's true. Like, all of that stuff can really lead to a rich life as well. So that's part of the reason why sometimes I don't push the money thing as much in terms of just getting more money, because I think for some people, you know, that's not the rich life that they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's plenty of people who have plenty of money and no happiness, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely they're not correlated.
No.
It's just one thing. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about, can we talk about the kind of coaching you do, just so my audience can kind of have it cemented in their mind? What kind of client is ideal for you? Where is she in her career, and how do you work with her over time?
Awesome. So my focus as a career coach is helping people find their passion. That is what I do. There's people out there who do interviews and resumes. For me, it's the bigger picture, the strategy of what is it that's going to make you light up in the morning when you think about work. The clients I work with are women in their 30s and 40s. And I work with men too now, who've done that 20-year-old thing, right? Who've kind of like, we're told to go to graduate school or do whatever and get that job. And they wake up 30 and are like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? And want something more. And they know what they don't want, but they don't know what they do want. Those are the people that tend to be drawn to me, and they're unwilling to settle for something, you know, because life is short and they want some more meaning in their work. And the way that I work with them, I don't coach with people privately anymore, but I have several programs where I'm super involved in people's lives. And I walk you through how to figure out what is going to make your career happy and what is your real passion. And then how are you going to actually get a job that's going to, you know, fulfill that passion and keep the roof over your head and let you lead that rich life.
Why did you stop doing one-on-one coaching?
For two reasons. One was, one of the coaching skills people teach you is detachment as a coach. And I'm really bad at that. I get really involved in people in my clients' lives, and because careers, I mean, your career is like one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make is related to your career, because it's your survival. And it was hard for me to have a lot of clients and to detach from them at the end of the day. And the second is from a purely for profit boss here. It's also leverage. For me, I can reach a lot more people. I want to reach 1 million people and help them with their careers in terms of my clients. I've definitely reached well over 1 million just in terms of my message.
Yeah.
But I'd like to reach so many more personally, and I can do that better with the programs that I have now. I just only have so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
So I couldn't reach the people that I want to reach if I did it that way.
Can you give us a couple examples? Try to pick people from different industries or whose careers look really differently, but can you give us an example of win stories, both to exemplify what you do, but also just so people have something to model and live into?
Oh, that's a great question. So one of my clients left corporate HR and she became a professional organizer.
Okay.
She got featured on the news. She shared that in a Facebook group a little while ago, which is awesome. Another one of my clients left teaching and she became a professional landscape designer.
Oh, very cool.
Because she loves gardening. And yeah, that was really, really exciting. Another one of my clients has transitioned from, she's also in HR and she is now a professional author. And I have one who's working on becoming a professional dancer, which I think she's younger, which I think is really, really cool. She's a librarian by trade, actually. So those are, is that enough stories? Those
yeah,
are just
that's great. Let me ask you, the woman specifically who went from HR to closet organization. So your role with her is to help her figure out, wow, and actually I am empathetic with this woman because I love the feeling of organizing things. So I get it. And I used to say, if I could make a ton of money as a closet organizer, a home organizer, that's what I would do, right? But I'm in finance. It's just, so far as I know, higher income potential. But anyway, so you work with her. She figures out, I love the satisfaction of organizing people's closets. I'm going to go do this. And then you didn't train her how to start that business.
No, okay. No, I didn't on that. I do some help with that. Obviously I know how to run a business, but yeah, no, my focus is more on what is it that you want to do. And let me give you the system to help you figure it out.
Okay. So you really are focused on the person who's like, wow, I look out in the wide, wide world and I'm just a little lost in terms of what turns me on and gets me up out of bed with passion.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Exactly right. And I just, you know, I want people to create such wealth in their lives through their career, both financially and in terms of meaning. And so I feel like this is the way I can help them do that.
I mean, what you do is almost immeasurable, intangible, but it's so important. And so many people don't have it.
Yeah.
That joie de vivre, or I don't know, joie de vivre is joy in life. So joy in career. Do you know how to say that in French?
No, I don't. Yes. I was like, I know joie de vivre as well. But
I know.
Je ne sais pas. I don't know. There we go. That's my French.
Very good. Excellent. Okay. Is there anything we didn't cover yet, Christy?
I don't think so. But I just, you know, for everyone out there who's listening, I just want to say that if you are stuck in your career and you're wanting to kind of create more, not only financial wealth, but just richness in your life, you can totally do it. You know, like, you don't have to be special. You don't have to be inspired. You just have to be willing to take a few risks and to put yourself out there a little bit. And if you do that, it's amazing what will change.
That's pretty cool. Does it feel like a risk to take on discovering your passion?
Oh yeah. For a lot of people, absolutely. Because they fear that they don't have a passion or there's no passion out there, or if they find it, they won't be able to do it. Or it won't work for them, or, you know, they have family or other people telling them just to put their heads down and work hard. So they have to fight against their doubts as well as other people's. There's a lot that stands in our way between I want something else and being actually willing to go after it.
Very great. Well, that's good. I know as part of what I do is sharing my story and my journey. And in terms of taking risk, you know, every time I open up my mouth and I share the parts of my past that don't seem like they're put together, it feels like a risk. But I know that by doing that, I attract a certain person. And by the same token, I'm sure I repel a certain person, but it isn't common in my industry to share in that way, right? You look at most financial advisor websites, they are well pedigreed and all buttoned up. And I've just chosen to do business a different way so that I attract a different conversation. So we can be real.
Yes, absolutely.
And then, you know, I thought of something when you were talking. I have specifically come down on the idea of doing what you love and the money will follow because of what happens when people take what they love to do and make it their work. And I know that you're aware of the example of someone, for example, who loves photography, becomes a photographer, and then finds that their life is now a grind because the joy, creativity, and maybe the you can do it whenever you want it kind of a thing has been taken out of what they do. I'm sure that, you know, you kind of know what I'm talking about. How do you advise people to avoid that?
Well, I tell them what the difference between a passion and hobby is. And a hobby is something you do because it relaxes you. And it's easy. A passion you do even when it is hard. And even when it's hard, you're inspired by it.
I'm like blown away.
So I think if you can have a like real talk conversation with yourself about, is this a hobby or is this a passion? That'll prevent a lot of those mistakes.
Well, I see why you have gained the success that you've gained. That's really profound. I specifically tell people, like, just beware taking what you love to do and turning it into work.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about, I'm looking at, so this is going to be episode 23. So Christy has some gifts for you today and they're really cool. If you want to get them, go to hillaryhendershot.com/23. So the first gift is a free workbook for anyone who wants to start a business or change careers, but is struggling in figuring out what they love. So this is a workbook that's actually going to take people kind of through the process that you described.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good way to start to jumpstart your thinking. It's not everything because it's only 6 pages because I want to keep it simple and get you going.
Yeah.
But for some people, I've gotten emails saying that's all they needed. So yay.
Yeah. And you said, okay, I'm marking you as one of my million. And then as a free gift, you also offered worksheets for anyone who wants to start a coaching business. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I started my coaching practice, I didn't really know anyone who was coaching as their own coach. They were coaching within other organizations. And I was really lost as to like how to do this. I had all of this experience as a director of a business unit and a company, but zero as a solopreneur. These are the worksheets I wish I had had. It's really how I can put it. And I put them together because a lot of people see my success as a career coach and say, and they are interested in coaching and they say, how did you do it? So I got too many people asking me. So I'm like, let me just put together some worksheets and you can like sign yourself up if you're interested and see a little bit of what I wish I had when I started and a little bit of insight into how I got where I am today.
And just to circle back to the ratio we were talking about at the very beginning of the conversation, which is like how much time you spend selling versus how much time you spend actually delivering coaching services. When you were building your business, how did you measure your proactive activities or how did you know you were on the right track?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I think in the beginning, everything you do is crazy proactive, right?
I mean, you're just selling all the time, right?
Well, in the very beginning you are because you don't really have a lot of clients.
Right.
And you need the income.
So did you set then, I'm going to close this many clients kind of goals, or did you set revenue goals? How did you motivate yourself?
I had a monthly revenue target that broke down into, it was like, depending, it was like two clients of this package or three clients of this package. Kind of thing. So yeah, so I had a monthly target to hit for private clients. And then I set up if I, you know, need this many clients, how many people do I need to talk to get this many to say yes? Right. So I tried to figure all of that out.
Awesome.
So I had a clear funnel. Yeah. Awesome. But yeah, it was revenue in the beginning.
And then you have some like group coaching and some live events that you do, right?
Yeah. So I have a big group coaching program once a year at the beginning of the year to help people figure out their passion. It's called the Career Happiness Revolution. That's the one that I'm like, we're a crazy stalker in your life. And then I have a couple of do-it-yourself programs, the Networking Masterclass and Zero to Passion. So if you're like, oh my God, I need this help now and I want it right away, you can get that from my website and it's just there for you.
Okay. Christy, you've been fantastic. I am not shocked, but I'm pleased at the degree to which our teachings overlap and intertwine. And I love just some of the clarity and distinction that you've given in the interview. I really appreciate your time and those gifts. Profit Boss, if you're listening, go to hillaryhendershot.com/23 and get those gifts from Christy because it's really going to help you out. Thanks for being here, Christy.
Oh, my pleasure, Hillary. It's been awesome.
If you liked this episode, I'm inviting you to join us today in the free private Profit Boss community on Facebook. You don't have to know a super secret password or handshake, but you will benefit from a warm, encouraging, and confidential community who are all there to grow and learn from each other. It's an awesome opportunity to create a classroom out of what you learn here on Profit Boss Radio and in life and get feedback from how others in the Profit Boss community are achieving financial independence. Some of the really valuable discussions we've had recently in the Facebook group are how to make sure tax time goes super smoothly for you with no stress, what tools people are using to track their spending and make sure they're achieving their financial goals, and also what resources people are using to master their money mind. So plug in and take advantage of the collective wisdom from your fellow profit bosses. Crowdsource the answers to your most important financial questions in a confidential and supportive environment. Just go to hillaryhendershot.com/profitboss. That's hillaryhendershot.com/profitboss. And that link redirects you to a Facebook group. Just request membership and we'll let you right in. It's free. It's cool. It's awesome. It's supportive. We'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.